So something a little bit different for you here this morning. A different kind of homily for different kind of readings. Because usually, the readings that we hear exhort us to some kind of action. Some kind of virtue to acquire, sin to repent of, some sort of creed to believe. Not so much this week. This week, not so much something to do as something to remember. Not so much an action to take as an idea never to forget. Never forget this. This world, everything in it, is passing away. And he is no fool who exchanges that which he cannot long keep for that which he can never lose. Just the other night, I walked out of the rectory, just for the heck of it, and I was astonished to look up and to see the most spectacular sunset that I can remember seeing in a very, very long time. The sky was ablaze with all the crimsons and all the golds, and offset with the deep azures and the purples, looked just like fire. And I stood there, stared and appreciated it for as long as I could, because I knew it would only be like that for just a couple of minutes. Just out the exit here and up the path, there's a tree. It's over by the Jesus statue with the small children. And every year, October, November, give or take, the leaves of that tree glow with reds and oranges so bright you'd swear somebody had plugged the whole thing into an electrical outlet. And one of these nights I'm going to come by, and I'm not going to be surprised in the least to discover that that tree is glowing in the dark. It's so bright and so beautiful. And I try to appreciate it, you know? Because it's only like that for about a week. And then it kind of loses its edge. Fades away. Sometimes I wonder, am I the only person who feels a little bit sad that beautiful things have to fade away? Am I the only person who thinks it's a little bit melancholy? You know, when you see the snow fall in the winter and it covers all the branches right up to the very edge of the tree and it looks just like lace. It's absolutely beautiful. But it's only that way for about an hour. And there's about an hour in the springtime when every bush is a blossom and every tree is a flower, and you got to appreciate it. You know, because the soon as one stiff breeze comes along or one heavy rain, it's washed away. It'll never be like that, not for a whole other year. It's kind of sad. There's a few poets who have waxed eloquent about this very idea. One of my favorites is Robert Frost. He talks about this in some of his poems. Listen to this, real brief poem. It's called Gold. Listen to this. He says, "Nature's first green is gold. Its hardest hue to hold. Its earliest leaf's a flower, but only for an hour. Then flower gives way to leaf. So Eden came to grief. So dawn goes down today. Nothing gold can stay." Why can't beautiful things last? Why is it that a glistening athlete or a gorgeous actress has to inevitably succumb to the burden and the weight of years, and there's no getting away for it, comes for us all? Why can't beautiful things last? Would you believe that the answer is astonishingly simple? The answer is because only God is beautiful. All other beauty in the world is on loan from God. It doesn't belong to the one who holds it. Everything God made bears his signature. Everything God made is beautiful. Some more vibrant than others, but it's in all the things God made. But only God is beautiful just by being. And one of the reasons why God allows beautiful things to fade away is to remind us not to seek the art, but to seek the artist who made it. Not to seek the gift, but to seek the giver who gave it. All of God's works lead us to Him. And we never want to forget that that's what they're intended to do. That's what our readings are all about today. You know, the first reading from the book of Ecclesiastes. Hope you were listening, because that's the only time you ever hear from Ecclesiastes every 3 years. You won't hear that little reading again for 3 more years. And Ecclesiastes is one of the most satisfying books in the Bible to read. It's so cathartic, because it expresses ideas you've held in your heart, but you've been afraid to say out loud because you didn't think it was okay to say such things. It's like he vents his spleen. The author is somebody named Koheleth. And according to tradition, at least, that's King Solomon, wisest man who ever lived. And the wisest man who ever lived looks around all the things in the world and he says, you know what? It's all pointless. It's all just pointless. Everything you work for, you're going to lose. And it's going to go to somebody who didn't work for it at all. And no matter what you accomplish, it's all going to be forgotten. Vanity of vanities, says Koheleth. Everything is vanity. Do you believe that? Sometimes you think that. Everybody thinks that at one point or another. I knew a lawyer once. He worked 8 months on one argument in a case. He thought it was going to be the slam dunk that would win the case. With one stroke of a judge's gavel, all his evidence was thrown out. Vanity of vanities. Once upon a time, I went to the beach. And I was walking along the beach, and I couldn't miss this one guy making this sand castle. And when I say sand castle, I mean like professional quality, weapons-grade sand castle. Okay, this thing was a work of art. It was approximately the size of your garage. Something to behold. And wouldn't you know it, later that night, a storm suddenly blew up the Atlantic coast, washed the whole sand castle away. All I could think of was Ecclesiastes. Vanity of vanities, everything's vanity, it's all pointless. Question for you this morning. You have to surrender it all in death. But does that mean that it's all pointless? Well, if you spend your life chasing after what you must surrender in death, then yeah, it is all pointless. Four false gods, people waste their lives chasing after power, honor, money, pleasure. St. Thomas Aquinas says, they're the four false gods. If you give your heart to that, yep, it's all pointless. And this is what Jesus says here in the gospel. Man in the gospel is so rich, he can't build grain silos fast enough to store all of his grain. And he looks at all that he's done, pats himself on the back, and he says, I am so great. Oh my goodness, am I a success or what? Jesus looked at such people and he calls them fools. The Psalms say, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God above. And if you give your life, that is to say, you give your heart to things that you must surrender in death, you're living just like you don't believe in God. You might even show up in church on Sunday morning, but your daily life is practical atheism. If there was no God, what would we do all day long? I guess we'd just get, take, get as much money as you possibly could, enjoy yourself as much as you possibly could, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. And you know, every religion in the world teaches that this is foolishness. Something fascinating. Once upon a time, I did a comparative study of all the religions, and I came across the most interesting little fact. Did you know that in the initiation ritual of all the world's major religions, there are 5 common ideas, 5 common teachings in all the initiation rituals of all the world's religions? Do you want to hear? Are you ready for this? Number 1, you're going to die. Number 2, your life will be hard. Number three, you are not in control. Number four, you're not that important. Number five, your life is not about you. And all the religions in the world teach it. You're going to die. Your life will be hard. You're not in control. You're not that important. And your life is not about you. And we all know that we can't chase after the things that we must surrender in death. And heaven alone knows we don't know how much time we have. And like they all say, you can't take it with you. I like the way Billy Graham once put that. He said, I've never seen a hearse pulling a U-Haul. And what are you supposed to do about it? How are we supposed to act in this? One of my favorite ideas was expressed by the Second Vatican Council. It's in a document called Gaudium et Spes. And the line is, man discovers his true self when he makes a sincere gift of himself. Do you know Pope John Paul II said that was the most important line in the entire Vatican Council? Man discovers his true self when he makes a sincere gift of himself. Why? Because God is nothing but gift. God owns nothing. God is being, and he's absolute and complete gift. Since you're made in his image, the more you act like God acts, the more you discover who you truly are. And our happiness depends on this. We all know this to be true. And when you act against what you know to be true, you know, you're the architect of your own unhappiness. It's called cognitive dissonance. Read a little article this past week on cognitive dissonance. And just in case anybody doesn't know what that is, real simple explanation. Cognitive dissonance is the burden that you carry, the discomfort that you feel, when your actions don't line up with your beliefs. Now, that describes all of us here. I don't know anybody but anybody who has high ideals and absolutely always lives up to them. And when you fail to live up to the ideas that you have, that's a burden. That's unhappiness. It's called cognitive dissonance. So, for example, if you believe in faithfulness in marriage and you are being unfaithful outside your marriage, you're carrying a heavy burden of cognitive dissonance, and it weighs you down. If you say in your heart that people ought to be honest, but you yourself tell lies whenever you profit from it, that's cognitive dissonance. It's weighing you down every day. If you believe that people ought to be generous to the poor, but you yourself selfishly hoard every last penny for your own self-keeping, that's cognitive dissonance. And it weighs you down. We all know we must not cling to what's passing away. And there's a tremendous amount of happiness and freedom when we finally live by it. Not only does it lead to our happiness, it also leads to our salvation. It's the truth that we know put into action. Every time I get up here to preach, I look out across all the people. There's an idea that I always have, and that is that every last one of us here is immortal. You've never met a mere mortal in all your life. All of us, from the very youngest to the very oldest, is destined to live forever. The only question is where. We are all going to be forever and ever, either in heaven or in hell. As I once heard it put, don't worry, you're going to live forever. The only question is location, location, location. So a little bit of tough love from sweet and gentle Jesus here this morning. Do not cling to what you must surrender in death. And with the time that you have left in this world, don't store up treasures for yourselves, but grow rich in what matters to God. Amen.